Hey there, this is Sophie. Before we get started on our deep dive podcast conversation today, I just wanted to let you know that if you enjoy our podcast, you might also enjoy some of the other great content we have available on YouTube, our blog, and our website. Be sure to check it out, russellinvestments.com.
Clients like yield. They like income.
Feels so tangible.
Feels so easy. I'm making money. I'm getting 2%. I'm getting 3%.
They like income. About it. Yeah.
It's important to see, does the client need the income, need the dividends? The one thing they want the most is actually taxed at the highest rate of everything they have. Qualified dividends, long-term capital gains, they're going to be taxed for many taxpayers at a lower rate than yield. So many clients don't really need income, they just want return. But it's easy to get yield or these distributions. Well, maybe they don't need that, and maybe they'd be better served to have some interest income moved over to muni space, or maybe they could be invested in a way that has more return through capital appreciation, not having realized dividends and realized gains come out over that time period. There's a balance there, and I think they're better off sometimes to invest differently to try to defer that gain, or do ways to offset gains with losses, not to have to pay any more tax than you have to over a given time period.
Welcome to the Russell Investments Podcast, where we take a deep dive into the world of investing. I'm Sophie Antel-Joubert, Head of Business Solutions for Russell Investments Advisor and Intermediary Solutions Business. Today, we're going to continue our deep dive on tax-smart investing. You've heard in previous episodes from Senior Portfolio Manager John Eggens about the portfolio management intricacies of tax-smart investing, and you've also heard from our investment strategist for tax-managed, Rob Kaharik, about the six questions advisors should be asking about tax-smart investing. Today, I'm joined by our head of RIA Bank Trust and Family Office Group, Frank Pape, for an update on how the tax year 2018 ended and what advisors and investors should be paying attention to in 2019. So with that, welcome, Frank.
Hi, Sophie. Thanks for having me here.
It's a pleasure to see you. So, Frank, maybe we dive in with some numbers. I know that you are a numbers junkie, so I thought we would start, in your comfort zone. You ready?
I'm ready, Sophie. What do you got?
Perfect. So, you and I sit right by each other, Frank, in our Seattle office. So I have the honor and the pleasure of overhearing a lot of your conversations and sort of calls with advisors and clients. I've heard you reference three numbers in particular repeatedly since the beginning of the year in your conversations with them, and I was hoping you might be able to give at least me some context around what these numbers are. The first one I've heard you say a lot is 91%, then there's 86%, and then the third one is 11%. What are you talking about when you're giving these numbers? The disparity seems quite large, and it's always very heated and passionate.
Yeah, Sophie, thanks. There's three numbers we've been talking about quite a bit, and some of these numbers are really interesting, I think, for advisors to understand what it means going into 2019 is really important. 91%, that's the number of U.S. equity funds, ETFs, index funds, mutual funds. 91% in 2018 had a negative return. So 91 out of 100 on average product had a negative return for the year 2018.
Wow. And that's based on Morningstar data, presumably?
That's Morningstar data, going right from Morningstar and dumping everything. Again, that's U.S. equity. If it's U.S. equity, we counted it. Given that backdrop, 86%, the second number you had, 86% of those same products we looked at had a capital gain distribution for the year of 2018, meaning you had a negative return, and 86 out of 100 on average product kicked out a 1099 that had a taxable distribution for the investor if it's in a taxable account.
So just to help me understand this, so I didn't make money on my fund, potentially, in 91% of chances. I didn't make money on my fund, but I was paying a tax on a distribution if it was in a taxable account.
That's exactly right. And you think about it. So again, this 86% number had this taxable event, a year with a negative return. Go back to 2017, when the markets were up over 20%, and that number was 68% had a capital gain distribution. So we go forward with a year with worse return and more distributions come out of mutual funds. So really it's this phrase we're talking about, the double whammy.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Negative return and then a taxable hit. on top of that.
So how big were those distributions?
Yeah,
where the third number comes in?
Yeah, this is the third number. Again, we're tracking and look at Morningstar data, and the average distribution that came out from these U.S. equity products
was in 2018
was 11% of net asset value. Even if you reinvest that distribution, it's still a taxable event for investors. And again, these are averages. I mean, there's some that were higher than 11%, and of course, some that were lower. But we saw a really wide disparity of these distribution amounts. Being negative and having a preponderance of funds kicking out a taxable distribution, not a pleasant experience for investors in 2018.
So that whole phrase of like Happy New Year, not so much if you're a taxable investor and you were sort of confronted with some of these situations.
Yeah, we wrote a blog on our website called Adding Insult to Injury. And it really is exactly this idea of adding insult to injury because, again, negative returns and paying this tax over the time period. And conversations just with advisors and investors and my own spouse. People are trying to understand this relationship, but wait a minute. We reinvested those dividends. We reinvested those capital gains. Why are we paying a tax? And like, this is just how it works. This is how the industry works. That's why this topic, tax smart investing, is so important for advisors to fully get behind and understand.
Yeah, and why we keep coming back to it at Russell Investments.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. So that at least now clarifies these three numbers, 91%, 86%, and 11% that I keep hearing you say. Thank you.
Sophie, that's the beauty of the open office that we live in. We get to hear all these things.
Exactly. Yeah, you learn a lot.
Yeah.
It's always interesting.
Good and the bad.
Tax Cut and Jobs Act. 2018 taxes have now been filed for most of us, and the rest of us are paying fines on extensions. So that was the first year that this was in place. How did it impact taxes this year and tax returns for, say, the average investor?
You think about it. So the Tax Cut and Jobs Act was passed in December of 2018. Lots of headlines about lower tax rates.
December of 2017. To take effect in 2018.
Exactly. Thank you, Sophie. So lots of headlines about lower rates. And this is going to be great for taxpayers. And it's one of those things that you can't really generalize about how a change of tax code could impact everybody. But as we move into 2019, we have some broad numbers are coming in. And some numbers from the Tax Policy Center, think tank in Washington, D.C., just looking at numbers through the first few months of the year. And their data is showing about 65% of individuals actually paid less year over year from 2017 to 2018 paid less. About 6% paid more, and about 31% paid the same. So if you think about it, really, the more you made, probably the bigger the tax cut you got over the time period. Again, looking at averages, this Tax Policy Center numbers, the average taxpayer got about a $1,300 tax cut, if you will, from 2017 to 2018. On their federal taxes. Again, this is just the federal taxes, not the state taxes. And what's interesting, I mean, I'm a CPA. I've been around taxes for a long time. This is the biggest change the tax code since 1985, 1986, when Ronald Reagan was the president. So this was not an immaterial thing. This was a big change in regards to the tax code. And a lot of the dust had settled. There's lots of topics like the pass-through income, these opportunity zones, things that are still being clarified in regards to the rules. But broadly, we know these numbers that for most people, they did get a tax cut year over year.
So that sounds like mostly good news, right?
It's funny you say that because it's mostly good news. But what's interesting is, especially for this podcast, for advisors, you think about as an advisor, work with your client, what's the part of the tax return that you as an advisor have the most control over? What's how they invest and the taxes that come from those investments? If we look at through that lens, the tax rates and the thresholds for qualified dividends, long-term capital gains, those tax rates didn't change from 2017 to 2018. And the thresholds, right, the threshold where you go from different rates, barely change year over year. So as an advisor, the things that help the mutual funds, the buying and selling of underlying stocks and bonds, those tax rates didn't actually change. And again, I talked about the magnitude of this Tax Cut and Jobs Act. You would think that those things would change as well.
Right, yeah. The whole TCJA was the headline for so long and apparently had at least some of its intended effect of lowering taxes for a lot of people. But actually, when it comes to the investment part of my sort of wealth, didn't actually have an impact at all.
This is the part the advisor has the most influence over. And I think it's important for the advisor to remind their clients about that. Yeah, that the tax rate may have gone down for your interest income and your wages, but for the part that they control together and how they invest, those didn't change. And Sophie, one other part that we shouldn't forget about is the impact of the, if you recall, the 3.8% net investment income tax.
Yes.
That was associated
with the medical.
The Affordable Care Act that passed over years ago. So this is the 3.8% tax for this Affordable Care Act that's tied to net investment income, things that earn passively, like interest income, capital gains, investing in mutual funds. That 3.8% tax did not go away. Given Republican control of the House and Senate and the president, you would have thought maybe that could have been removed, but that 3.8% remains.
Stayed in place. So what can advisors do about this? I mean, if this has continued to be a problem, right, and will continue to do so, because I don't see them changing, you know, Congress doing another act of Congress and changing the tax laws again just to address this investment side. What do advisors do? What do you talk to advisors about sort of helping investors?
Well, the first thing is very conversation. Just be aware of what's going on, understand what these impacts are from how you invest and how that we talk about tying it to your Form 1040 and how you tie the 1040 and the 1099, tie that to the investment return. And understand there's things that you can do to get in front of that.
I think because I guess it's true. Sorry, just on that. I mean, it's true that when I'm filing my taxes, I'm not always connecting in my head what I'm writing down on my check for, you know, Uncle Sam relative to what I discussed with my advisor in terms of what my investment performance was.
Sophie, that's an excellent point because we Russell Investments as an industry, not just Russell Investments, but other mutual fund companies and broker dealers. And if you do this on yourself on some other tried investment platform, we put in front of investors that pre-tax return. Mm-hmm. Right. We say, here's your fund day. You're up 8% for the year. You think, yay, I'm up 8% for the year. Very few people really tie in the April 15th event, right, that getting that 1099, paying the tax on the 1040, that after you pay, always like to carry on Uncle Sugar, and you write that tax to the federal government, that 8% pre-tax return that we're so good at putting on the statement, after you pay that tax, that 8% goes down to pick a number, you know, 7%, 6%, whatever it is, after tax return. That's what we're really trying to get people to understand is that this tie-in between pre-tax return and what happens on the 1040. And, you know, Rob Gohark always says, you know, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. And we're really trying to reinforce that, you know, just that pre-tax return is exciting. After tax return is what really matters for taxable assets.
That's what you actually end up being able to, you know, spend and invest and do whatever else you want.
That's what's going to get you to meet your long-term financial goals. That's what really matters. And as we talked about in the prior podcast, some of the tax return, the tax drag numbers for some of the investments out there are really, really material. And people see that. It can be quite eye-opening in regards to after-tax return.
Well, and then there is also a story about not everybody publishes after-tax returns, right? I mean, I guess they're pretty complicated to be able to actually calculate, but we tend to really focus on pre-tax returns, and some of that is just it's hard to get a hold of after-tax returns across the industry broadly. Is that right?
It can be quite difficult to find the after-tax return. Every fund company or ETF or mutual fund has to publish it somewhere per the SEC. But it's not always easy to find. So sometimes it might take some digging in the prospectus. Might take several clicks on a website to get there. But yeah, the number's out there. And again, advisors can help their clients understand where that is, how to find that. But yeah, it has to be out there published somewhere. Not always easy to find. In fact, we have a blog that's out on our website that really helps advisors walk through the math on how to calculate after-tax return, just to make sure we're all using the same terms and we're understanding how to make that calculation effectively for their clients.
So you talked about helping the client be able to tie together the 1099 and their Form 1040 with their investment return. What else can advisors do? So even in that vein, but what else should advisors maybe be focusing on themselves and also helping direct their investors' attention towards?
So we all should understand, what is our marginal tax rate? What's that tax rate on the next dollar earned? If you don't know the marginal tax rate for your client, it makes it really, really difficult, if not impossible, to make an informed decision between investment A or investment B. Do I go with a municipal bond or a taxable bond fund?
So that's sort of your first clue.
First clue.
In this, you know, sort of forensic navigating of tax smart investing for your clients is know the marginal tax rate of your client, of each client.
For all of us to know that, but definitely for advisor and to know on their clients and the marginal rate and just the average or effective tax rate. You take the total tax expense divided by the taxable income, get the effective rate, And then the marginal rate, the other one I think is equally, is more important, that tax on the next dollar earned.
Anything else? I mean, these 1099s, pretty easy to come by. We receive them all. Is it just one standard form? Once I know the standard form as an advisor, I'm good to go? Or is the devil in the details there, too?
The devil is in the details, exactly, for
I
sure.
I knew it was going to be
knew
the case.
That
these CPAs, they've always got the devils in the details.
So for the 1099, you know, it's often, well, first of all, the 1099, there's like 13 different versions of the 1099. There's one for interest, one for miscellaneous income. There's all kinds of 1099s.
Literally 13?
I think it's 13.
An unlucky number.
Well,
that's
go
classic.
Figure. The IRS.
That's
go
classic.
Figure. Go figure. So you get the 1099s, and many broker dealers and fund companies or broker dealers will summarize this 1099 and give you a summarized 1099 where you can track these things easier. But either way, on these 1099s, you can see on there the ordinary dividends, qualified dividends, taxable interest income, tax-free municipal bond interest income. You can see all these numbers are flowing through on the 1099. I mean, ideally, it would be great to see the clients or prospects of Form 1040, mm-hmm. right? But we know there's some clients, if it's a prospect or even people might be kind of reticent to show you the 1040, but you have probably better odds of getting that 1099. But either way, when you see these numbers, you can see, like you get a 1099, they have this giant amount for a qualified dividend. Well, does the client, when you look at this dividend, first of all, is that size of that dividend big relative to the investment size? Mm. So if you have a $2,000 capital gain, if you will, a $2,000 capital gain on a $5,000 investment, that might
That's
be something
sizable.
To look at.
Yeah,
yeah, sizable.
Let's have a conversation.
If it's a $2,000 cap gain on the 1099 versus a $100,000 portfolio, still something to look into, but not quite the warning that you might think.
So hypothetically now, I've gotten my clients maybe 1040, but certainly they're 1099. I've looked at it, and some things seem out of whack. Some things not so bad, but that's okay. I know what their marginal tax rate is. What do I do next? Like how do I then think about tax smart investing? Does this mean completely selling the holdings that my client currently has because you rip the Band-Aid off or, you know, either go big or go home? You've mentioned muni bonds a few times. At the beginning, you cited some numbers for equity funds. So what are some different things that I should be focusing on if I'm newer to this?
So what's interesting is I talked about earlier about how the industry, we so much focus on pre-tax return. And if you go into a mutual fund or investment product, it's likely that portfolio manager or that process, they are indifferent to taxes because so much of the assets out there are indifferent to taxes. A standard fund doesn't think about taxes, but if you go to a mutual fund or investment process where the title says tax managed, if the prospectus says tax managed, that completely opens up a whole toolkit, if you will, of levers that can be pulled on the client's behalf to be focused on taxes.
And that can make a huge difference for an individual investor, but even collectively, there's like $8.6 trillion of assets that are invested in open-ended mutual funds are actually taxable assets, right? That's another number I hear you say.
Yeah,
often.
Well, you look at the opportunity set in open-ended mutual funds with the data from ICI, the Investment Company Institute, to your number, over $8.6 trillion in taxable assets. That's a huge number. I mean, this isn't some niche or some side opportunity. These are material dollars out there for advisors to focus on. You know, we've had some really meaningful conversations with advisors, help them go after that. It's made a meaningful impact to their practice to focus on this. It really is the classic win-win situation. If advisors are effective here, not only is it higher ending wealth for their clients, it's higher AUM for the advisor's practice that are accruing to the value of their practice.
And so as you're talking with advisors and helping them walk through this, are there certain client profile types that seem overall to be well-suited for a tax-smart approach?
Yeah, that's funny you ask that, Sophie, because so often when I meet with advisors, especially in clients, they think, oh, I don't care. I'm not concerned about tax being tax-smart because that's only for people in the top tax bracket.
Oh,
right?
Just for high net worth just investors. For, it's not
or,
me. It doesn't
or ultra high net worth. You know, you think that top tax bracket today is 37% is that rate for the top tax bracket. You add 3.8% to that for the net investment income tax we talked about. So it's a 40.8 marginal tax rate for those in the top end. But if you back down a little bit, you think about it. If you have a client who is filing status, married filing joint, if they have taxable income north of $78,000, that marginal rate is 22%.
Wow. So almost a quarter of every dollar
ends up
going to Uncle Sam or Uncle Sugar, as you like to call
it. Exactly. You buy a CD and it has a 2% stated return, and you're in that 22% tax rate. 22 cents out of every dollar is going to go to the federal government in the form of federal taxes. If you have the pleasure to live in California or New York or some other high tax state, it's going to even be more eaten up over that experience. So not just ultra high net worth. Sure, it makes even more sense for them. But people even in the middle in regards to those tax brackets, it makes a ton of sense to focus on this because it's a headwind that's going to reduce your return.
That's pretty shocking because, I mean, when I work with advisors, I love hearing about their and their investors' sort of, you know, passions and passion projects.
Yep.
And, like, what are some of the charities and the causes that they care a lot about? And a lot of them work hard in order to be able to help fund, you know, and help contribute to these causes. I have never once heard anybody say that their sort of charity of choice was the U.S. government. And, you know, I love paying taxes and I want to pay more than my fair share or more than is necessary. So to think that some people are having to pay more because they haven't focused on taxes just seems nuts.
That's a fair point. And again, everything we're talking about here, we're not talking tax evasion, nothing off the books. This is all just, you know, being smart about taxes and, to your point, not paying any more than you have to.
Because the difference between tax evasion and tax smart investing is?
Prison, Sophie. Yes, it is prison. And again, it's just these are things that a good advisor can do, again, to help the current clients, and things you can do for prospects to help to grow your book, to help them, because this is an area that too many people are neglecting. It's so funny because people will see their statement, investment statement, see their negative return, or they see the capital gain distribution. Often they pay the tax out of a separate account. Right, you pay your tax
like a different account.
Checking account, or it comes out of my savings account. They don't think about their investment account. That's when you tie those together, you realize, like, holy cow, this is really reducing my after-tax wealth, and it's limiting my ability to fund what I want to do in retirement or whatever I'm trying to save for.
Again, to our friend Rob's point of it's what you keep, not what you make actually matters.
Yeah, I've unfortunately had too many investments that had no tax and no return. That is not the goal here. Our goal here is to not necessarily avoid a tax. No one ever retired by avoiding a tax. Our goal, or any investor's goal, should be to maximize after-tax wealth.
Well, thank you very, very much, Frank. We really appreciate you taking the time, sharing your insights, sharing more around the context of some of these numbers that we all hear. And certainly I know that I have the honor of hearing sitting right by you. But thank you also for giving us some perspective on what do the numbers mean, but also what can I do about them, right? Because these numbers are going to continue. As you said, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act did not improve the situation for my taxable investments, for my sort of, you know, income coming from my investments. So that is a problem that's going to persist. And if anything, looking at where demographics are going, people are going to need more income, but they also have a lot more taxable assets. So this is going to be something that, as an advisor, if I put my advisor hat on, I should probably be thinking about for a lot of my clients now. So it isn't just a niche issue, as you said, right? It's not just high net worth investors.
And Sophie, one point is this Tax Cut and Jobs Act, the way it's written, it's the rule of the land until 2025. So these rates that we have in front of us, the discussion we're having right now, this is the rules we're playing by, absent government action, until 2025. So this is going to be around for a while.
So it's worth learning about and digging
my
teeth
into.
Well, and in doing that, a few ideas that you suggested were, one, knowing the marginal tax rates of my clients, because that will really sort of be a starting point in helping me figure out, as I'm making sort of investment decisions on their behalf and with them, how can I best guide them. Two, getting a hold of their form 1040 if I can, and if I can't, then at least the 1099 can be helpful, but also looking and calibrating the income that they got, how does that compare relative to their total wealth. Might be a high number, but comparatively it might not be so high, so sort of contextualize some of that. Also looking at, does the client actually need the income, or is there a different way that we can continue to grow this wealth? Do they actually not need that income right now? And then when I'm looking at moving into after tax or tax smart investing, one, finding, digging, and might actually, it sounds like, require some actual digging, finding what those after tax return results are of funds that need to be published, but maybe not as prominently as we would like them to be in all cases. And second, looking for solutions that have tax smart investing or tax managed or tax something in the label, because that's what is sort of reveals that the manager has a larger toolkit.
Exactly.
And that sounds great. And overall, coming back to why are we in this business to start with, right? Like, as advisors and even as investment managers, why did we start in this business and why do we continue in this business? Because we're passionate about helping investors be able to achieve their long-term goals. And sometimes that means giving them income and helping them achieve income. Sometimes it means helping them achieve growth in their portfolio, depending on their life situation. Sometimes they're fee sensitive. And sometimes they're tax sensitive. And sometimes it sounds like they're tax sensitive without knowing that they're tax sensitive, or they should be more tax sensitive than they are today. So coming back to, again, why are we in this business? Why did we choose this profession? What are we doing to help investors and ourselves? You mentioned it's sort of a win-win situation. Those are sometimes the best cases to work on because it's fulfilling both for the client and for ourselves. And everybody wins at the end of the day. So thank you very much, Frank, for sharing your expertise in this and your passion for it. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Sophie.
This podcast was recorded on April 22nd, 2019.